Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri, and the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. Time, your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on critical condition when we come back. You know, over the past century, we Americans who were once independent, capable, and able to manage our own financial, medical, and legal affairs have now been reduced to dependence, incompetence, incapacity, and we have now been made wards of powerful commercial, financial, medical, and legal corporations, cartels, and bureaucratic institutions of our modern industrial society. And we've been taught to rely upon these paid professionals. Professionals like bankers to manage our financial affairs and doctors to manage and treat our health problems and lawyers to direct our business and legal affairs instead of relying upon our own good common sense. That's why I contend that we Americans who were once able to catch our own fish learn once again how to fish instead of being fed by our paid professionals. Regaining our power of attorney is the single most important step in regaining our capacity, rights, liberties, and duties. Now, if you'd like to learn more about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you write for my free general law CD package? Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website and send an email. So you go to georgegordon.org, just click onto the email machine at the website and then send an email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been reviewing Critical Condition. It's a book written by Donald Bartlett, B-A-R-L-E-T-T, and James Steele, S-T-E-E-L-E, Doubleday, New York, probably around $30, something like that, worth every dime. Which describes to us what has occurred in America. See, we Americans have rejected socialized medicine. We watched the Russian model, the English model, the Canadian model, and we rejected it here in this country. We said, well, we don't want socialized medicine. And we're pretty vociferous about it. We have socialized medicine in America. But we have a different brand of socialized medicine. And this book is exposing the flaws in the American socialized medical system. I don't participate in it myself. Once in a while, I may need some health care. You know, you have to have a dentist once in a while. You run into the dentist and he fills a tooth. Or you have a problem with this or that or something else, and you run to the doctor, and the doctor, he fixes this or that or something else. I avoid doctors and hospitals like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD, but you know, you never can tell. It may come up. That's the basic line that people give me. Well, you never can tell. That's why we have insurance. We practice limited liability, and we always say, well, you never can tell. The truth of the matter is, you should be able to tell whether or not you're going to have good health or bad by the lifestyle that you live. You're designed to have 70 years of life and 70 years of life trouble-free. The machine that was designed by God himself, you know, is a pretty good machine. It heals itself. It's got an immune system. It's got an immune response. But if you overload it with too many toxins and too many poisons, it breaks down. And so when it breaks down, people never say, gee, it broke down because it's my fault and I'm the proximate cause of my own injury. Nobody ever admits that it's my fault that I did this. It's somebody else that did it. It's somebody else's fault. Or it's just bad, rotten luck. Just bad, rotten luck. Well, in Chapter 3, they write a story about the anomaly of a system's failure. And so, with all of this bad, rotten luck and all of our sickness and disease, we have to have a solution. And so the solution is the medical system, and the medical system has had a metamorphosis in America. From the time when I was a kid, let's say back in 1950, when you just walked into Dr. Joe Walsh's office, and he gave you the services that you required or wanted and needed, and you paid him $5, and the last $5 was an office call. People just paid for their medical services as they needed them. Well, today people have insurance, and so when people are paying insurance premiums, they want to make sure they're getting their money's worth, and they do. And so they spend a lot of time in the doctor's office. You know, if all you people out there actually had to reach in your pocket and pull out the money and pay the doctor, you would go to the doctor a whole lot less often. So insurance encourages more doctor's visits. It encourages more medical problems. It's like the law enforcement growth industry. We're buying more and more sickness and more ill health because that's what we want. Now let's see what the results of that has been. In the summer of 2000, it was the turning point in California healthcare. It was a signal of what lay in store for the rest of the country. On Saturday morning, July 1st, at the Lakewood Regional Medical Center, 25 miles north of Los Angeles, a 60-year-old man with a history of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease arrived suffering from acute respiratory distress and shortness of breath. While he was in the ER, his heart stopped beating. It stopped beating three times, as a matter of fact, and he was defibrillated by electric shock. Finally, he was placed on a ventilator and given dopamine intravenously to raise his blood pressure. Dr. Domingo Barrientos, the physician on call, admitted him to the coronary unit because of the patient's existing health problems. Coupled with the cardiac arrest, Dr. Barrientos put in hurried calls for two consulting specialists, one for heart and one for lungs. Dr. Barrientos knew that the pulmonologist under contract to the hospital's physician management firm, KPC Medical Management Incorporated, had canceled his agreement several weeks earlier, and not without reason. He quit because he wasn't being paid. And when Dr. Barrientos asked KPC's medical director for a backup specialist, he was given another name. But that doctor refused the request. He said that he had performed KPC earlier, or that he had informed, rather, KPC earlier, that he would no longer treat its patients. And the staff cardiologist, Dr. Jerry Floro, did respond, and the two physicians tended to the patient as best they could, but he died without seeing a pulmonologist. Well, Dr. Barrientos was so shaken by the incident that he reported to KPC's legal department that he had made up his mind right then and there that I did not wish to work for KPC any longer than I had to. Now, while there was no telling whether a pulmonologist could have prolonged this patient's life or saved him, Dr. Barrientos said later that what was clear to him was that under these circumstances, the standard of care requires that specialty backup be available. So as he made plans to leave KPC and move into another practice, Dr. Barrientos was compelled to deal daily with conditions more apt to be found in an undeveloped country than in the nation routinely hailed as having the best healthcare system in the world. Not only was he unable to get specialists to treat patients, he often lacked basic medical supplies. KPC hadn't paid its bills. Once a patient showed up for a routine procedure requiring liquid nitrogen, and Dr. Barrientos had to send him home. KPC had run out of liquid nitrogen. The supplier had refused to extend further credit, and he couldn't order x-rays because the clinic had used up the x-ray solution, again, non-payment. And when he signed the last of the prescription pads with his name and state medical board and DEA numbers, he couldn't get replacements. The printer hadn't been paid. There were no tissues to give to patients to clean themselves following pelvic and rectal exams. And there were the never-ending life and death crises, like the ailing 50-year-old man with a history of diabetes, hypertension, and obesity who arrived at KPC's Downey Clinic on Firestone Boulevard in southern Los Angeles County. Again, Dr. Barrientos was on duty. He performed an EKG, which showed no abnormalities. Given the patient's multiple risk factors, he ordered an immediate treadmill stress test to assess the flow of oxygenated blood to the heart. The next available appointment was 3 weeks away, even after Dr. Barrientos explained the seriousness of the patient's condition. So finally, he prescribed nitroglycerin to be taken at the onset of chest pain and told the patient to call 911 if the pain did not subside after two doses. After about a week, the patient returned complaining of increased chest pain. Dr. Barrientos immediately sent him to Lakewood ER, where doctors discovered that he had suffered a heart attack. They admitted him immediately to the intensive care unit. The next morning, an angiogram showed that three coronary arteries were clogged and he underwent triple bypass surgery. It could have been different had this patient been able to obtain a stress test when I requested it, Dr. Barrientos said later. He would have then been admitted to the hospital for an angiogram and could have been treated before having a heart attack by angioplasty or other less invasive procedure. This delay in obtaining basic services caused my patient to suffer a heart attack needlessly. Had he not come to me that day, he may well have died. Now, the situation was much the same at KPC clinics throughout the greater Los Angeles area as doctors, nurses, and other staff members wrestled with the consequences of market-driven medicine. You want to underline that, boys and girls. It's called market-driven medicine. On Sunday, September the 10th, Ronald W. Hudson, Sr. was admitted to the San Antonio Community Hospital in Upland, a community of 68,000 in the foothills of the San Gabriel Mountains, about 35 miles east of Los Angeles. The 60-year-old Hudson, a dialysis patient with high blood pressure, diabetes, and end-stage renal disease, was no stranger to the hospital. During the previous 4 years, he had been admitted more than a dozen times, primarily for treatment of problems related to his dialysis, according to the hospital. This time, paramedics rushed Hudson to the emergency room with severe lower abdominal pain and a temperature of 102, and attending ER physician thought that it would be prudent to rule out appendicitis, and Hudson's nephrologist admitted him to the hospital. Well, a surgeon on duty decided that more tests were required. That's when differences erupted over ultimate responsibility as physicians debated whether to operate, who should operate, and when. An entry called Inland Global Medical Group, it's an entity called Inland Global Medical Group, an independent physicians association with hospital privileges, contracted with specialists to see its patients. It also contracted with a group called Sanicare to provide surgical services. Still another entity, Inland Global Services Incorporated, was responsible for managing all of these services, but it subcontracted the management services to yet another group, KPC Global Care Incorporated. When the surgeon who first saw Hudson and recommended more tests discovered that Hudson was in, or that he was an Inland Global patient, he said he was not under contract to treat Hudson. Other surgeons, he said, were contracted by Inland Global to treat such patients. The ER staff called a second surgeon for a consultation. He, too, declined, saying that he had no contract with Hudson's HMO. Now, let me pause here for a moment. You know why we have all of these entities? It's called limited liabilities. Let me describe for you here what limited liability is. You see, under the common law, we practice strict liability. That means that everybody's responsible for his own actions. Everybody's responsible for his own actions. A wild new concept. It's been around since the Garden of Eden. Well, since you don't want to be responsible for your actions, we need somebody, some entity that can be. So doctors who get sued quite regularly for malpractice, they don't want their homes in Bel Air or their boats and airplanes and toys to be taken away from them because they make a mistake. So they create these entities. And these entities are corporations. These corporations can sue and be sued. All right, so let's try this. You'll notice here that you've got a number of these incorporated service systems here that are working. And so the law comes into this game. Now, medicine and medical practice is a little different than building an airplane or putting cars together. If you make a mistake while you're assembling a car, so okay, it doesn't run good and you can fix it. But if you make a mistake on somebody, the guy may die and you can't bring him back. You can't rebuild this dead body. And so somebody sues for wrongful death, and it's usually several million dollars. So the doctors aren't dumb, you know. So the doctors create these artificial legal entities over here that are actually shell corporations that have no assets. They just have, you know, you could have a corporation with $10,000 worth of assets. You know, maybe it owns a lease on a building, and maybe it owns an x-ray machine and so on. And then the doctor works for this corporation. That way, when the doctor screws up, you sue this corporation. This corporation is a shell. It probably has insurance, and the insurance company comes in and defends this corporation. Now that's what you're dealing with here. You're dealing with everybody is trying to shirk any and all responsibility. Now when I was a kid, to give you an illustration, Joe Walsh, I doubt if old Joe had any malpractice insurance. He might have, I don't know, you know, 1930s, 40s, and 50s. Now, that's when old Joe Walsh was practicing medicine in Eureka, California. But the moral of the story is, whether he did or not, I don't think old Joe ever got sued for malpractice. I think old Joe was just totally responsible. Now, people weren't running to Joe every day with every ear, nose, and throat ailment. I mean, you know, you had to be sick. There had to be something wrong with you to go to a doctor, because you had to pay for that. We were practicing strict liability in 1950. Then we started practicing limited liability. That is, we don't want to be responsible for paying these bills. We want an insurance company. Once we're making our premiums, boys and girls, we want to make sure we're getting our money's worth. And so now we inundate these doctors. These doctors now are harried and overworked. They are unable to keep up with the caseload. And because of that, we're getting poorer and poorer medical services. I mean, you know, a doctor can only see so many patients a day. And these HMOs require that these doctors run these people through the system, run them through their doctor's offices about every 10 or 15 minutes. I mean, they line them up like a judge lines up sheep to be sheared in the traffic court. You know, you walk in there and you get in line over here to pay your money. That's the way medicine is being dispensed here in the United States. And that's 90% of our problem. Now, listen up. At that time, whenever an inland global patient arrived at the emergency room and needed surgical services, the hospital staff was supposed to call an inland global surgeon. When that failed, hospital personnel tried several times to reach yet another surgeon, Dr. Johann Zeb Mir. Now notice that these people are not white Anglo-Saxon Dr. Joe Walsh's. I mean, these guys are from India, Bangladesh, Ceylon. I mean, they're from all over the world. And I'm not saying that they're not good doctors. They probably are. But the standard of medical care in India and Bangladesh isn't the same as it is here in the United States now, is it? Or at least not what we think it ought to be. Now, is it? Now you're going to say, well, these guys are trained here in the United States. Well, maybe they are. But American medicine is degenerating, and that's the purpose of this book. It's called Critical Condition. It's degenerating right around us. You know, just take a look around you, and it's degenerating because of insurance. And my point is, if you're going to treat all these people, you got to have more doctors, don't you? More doctors mean these doctors all want to make the same kind of money that doctors are traditionally expected to make. In fact, they want to make more than that. And so now you get more and more doctors practicing more and more medicine through more and more corporations with more and more insurance and less responsibility and more of the irresponsibility that goes along with insurance, until now you've got a system that's broken called critical care. The last place I would want to go if I was really in trouble would be to a hospital. That's the last place I want to go. I need medical services. I need a doctor that knows what the hell he's doing and knows what he's doing now. I've got one of those. I mean, I can pay for that. So could you. If you weren't making those $10,000 a year premium payments, if your company would give you the $10,000 that they're paying on your medical insurance, it's just handed you the check, and you went over and put it in the bank or stuck it in the sock and stuck it under the mattress, in 3 or 4 years, you'd have enough money. You know, you could go to the doctor. If you had to reach in your pocket and pull out a $50 bill to pay that doctor, you'd go to the doctor a whole lot less often. Then the doctors would be less harried. The doctors would be more competent. They'd spend more time with you. They'd spend more time with people that have real medical problems. I'll bet you that half the people that are going to the doctor today are just going there as a social experience. It isn't because they're really sick. It isn't because they really need a doctor or doctor services. They're going there because we pay the insurance premiums, and by God, we're going to get our money's worth. And so the doctor has to sit there and talk to them just like he talks to everybody else. This in turn makes the insurance companies want to cut back on the expense. So the doctors, the insurance companies, the medical services and the HMOs are trying to cut you people back from all of these nonsensical and unneeded medical excursions to the doctors and the hospitals. And at the same time, how do you get the people that don't need medical services separated from the people that do? And that's what the problem is here. So along comes some guy that's having a real heart attack, and he gets into this system, a system that's designed more for manufacturing automobiles and tires than it is for treating people that have life and death health problems. Well, finally, David Duong, D-U-O-N-G, a registered nurse on duty, placed a call of his own. And when he got through to Dr. Murr, he advised him that there was a request for a surgical consultation. Dr. Murr asked how the patient was doing. Duong replied he's fine. Dr. Murr said he would see the patient the next morning. Duong did not describe Hudson's condition. And according to Duong, the surgeon asked, is the patient okay? Duong said he replied he's okay. Unfortunately, Duong was unaware that Hudson had been diagnosed with possible appendicitis. Meanwhile, Hudson's condition deteriorated. His appendix ruptured and peritonitis set in. The infection spread through his body. 2 days after Hudson arrived at the hospital, an inland global surgeon performed emergency surgery. 11 days later, Hudson died. Now, amid the turmoil that characterized the KPC healthcare program, even tests to detect or rule out the existence of life-threatening diseases often went awry, delaying diagnosis and creating anxiety. Such was the case on September 13, 2000, at the Artesia Clinic on South Pioneer Boulevard in Los Angeles County. Dr. Saeed Yadagir, sounds like an all Irish name, doesn't it? Dr. Saeed Yadagir. He's the chief of radiology for several KPC clinics. He was preparing to do more tests on a woman whose mammogram showed two groups of, now listen to this word, macrocalcifications in one breast. I think that meant that she had lumps. Macrocalcifications are minute flecks or flakes of calcium, less than 1/50th of an inch in size. They appear as little white dots on the film. Usually they're harmless, but some are an early indicator of breast cancer. And while a skilled radiologist can often distinguish between the two by their size, shape, and arrangement, sometimes a biopsy is required to rule out cancer. Well, in this case, Dr. Yadagir deemed that a biopsy was needed. So before the minuscule deposits could be removed for examination, it was necessary to pinpoint their precise location. So Dr. Yadagir began by inserting two needles into the breast to place two small wires that would mark the location of the calcifications. The procedure required clear, high-contrast radiographic images. And while the two needles were in the breast and the radiologist was trying to localize the microcalcifications, the chemicals used to process the mammograms ran out. The films turned gray, and the radiologist could no longer read the images. Since the clinic had run out of the chemicals and the vendor refused to deliver any more until he was paid for prior shipments, Dr. Yadagir had no choice. He removed the needles and sent the patient home without completing the test. Hey, isn't that just special? Is this what healthcare in America has become? A woman being tested for breast cancer is sent home without completing the examination when the client runs out of chemicals. A man dies after physicians debate for 2 days about who should or would perform the emergency surgery based on who would or would not get paid. X-ray laboratory shut down for lack of supplies. Another patient cannot obtain a diagnostic test in time to predict the likelihood of a heart attack, so he waits for the heart attack to occur. A man with serious lung disease dies before he is seen by a specialist because the specialists have not been paid or will not work for a certain system. Now, does all of this really reflect medical care delivery in a country that spends $1.7 trillion a year on health care? The plight of the KPC clinics, although extreme, wasn't an aberration. It wasn't an outbreak of random events in an otherwise healthy system. The only difference between KPC and countless other managed care operations across America is one of degree. Increasingly, all of the problems that were faced by KPC's patients are confronting patients everywhere in America, although in many instances they may be unaware of what's taking place. The fact that it happened in California is understandable. The state has experienced more fully, or experimented, I should say, more fully with managed care than any other state. And since many social and economic trends of the last half century, for good and ill, began in California, what happened there may soon be coming to your doctor's office or hospital near you, if it's not already there. This is why the story of KPC deserves a closer look. Now, it's a bad business model. The chaos that engulfed the California clinics had its origins in the 1970s when Congress began encouraging the growth of health maintenance organizations, those are called HMOs, all through the 1970s and the years that followed. HMOs were touted as the way to bring health care costs under control. Let me pause right there and tell you what happened to the health care costs to start with. It's called insurance. It's called limited liability. When people pay insurance premiums, boys and girls, by God, we're going to get our money's worth. So your kid comes to you and says, hey, my ear aches. Oh, my God, we got to take you out of school and rush you to the pediatrician. Oh, my throat is sore. And so they rush him to the pediatrician. Every little ache and pain has to be dealt with a doctor, has to be dealt with some specialist somewhere. The healthcare system is overtaxed. Every pain, every symptom has to be treated with a pill, and there's money to be made. And then, of course, when there's money involved, well, then, of course, you know that attracts sharks. Blood in the water attracts sharks. Money to be made attracts sharks. Let me point out again, you know, when I was a kid years ago, we had one hospital in town. I'll take that back. We had a county hospital. That's where nobody could go unless you were indigent, and then you had general hospital. And these two hospitals in town served everybody. Now, you've got hospitals that are in business to make money. Hospitals are not there to serve the community. We used to have fund drives and fundraising activities, you know, for the hospital. It was a charity. Hospitals were charities. Hospitals were institutions that just dealt with helping people that were sick and needed help. Today, these are multi-billion dollar industries. There are chains of hospitals just like there are chains of McDonald's restaurants, for crying out loud. Those hospitals are in business to make money. This is business. It has nothing to do with charity, has nothing to do with health, has nothing to do with health care. It has to do with business and making money. And trying to make money and profits off of real people that have real medical problems kills a lot of people. Now, notice that these five or six examples that we just covered, now those are actually iatrogenic diseases. Those are deaths caused by or facilitated by the institutions, the hospitals and the doctors. The guy died of appendicitis. His appendix ruptured while these guys are sitting here arguing, fighting over what should have been done. Now, if I would have been a kid and I'd had, or if this was 1950 and I had the same problem, I wouldn't have an HMO, I wouldn't have insurance, and I would have gone to Dr. Walsh. I'd have walked into his office and he'd have said, "Let me examine you." And he'd have felt around and he said, "Is that hurt? Oh, God, that's killing me." And said, "Oh, duh." And the Dr. Walsh, he would have said, "My God, I think you're having an appendicitis." And he'd have sent you up to General Hospital, and they'd come up there, and they would look at you, and then Joe Walsh would have come up there and operated on you, your own doctor. I mean, the doctor that you went to was the same doctor that was going to operate on you, and he'd cut your appendix out, and you would have paid Walsh, and you would have paid the hospital out of your own pocket. You wouldn't have had insurance. I don't know what an appendix would have cost in 1950, but I would imagine somewhere around, you know, $400 or $500, which, you know, 1950 was a lot of money. But you wouldn't have been paying all these insurance premiums. You'd have had $400 or $500. You know, you people would be able to afford health care if it wasn't priced into the stratosphere. Healthcare was not priced in the stratosphere. It was expensive when I was a kid. It was more than we wanted to pay. And we were careful about how we spent our healthcare dollars. But hell, we didn't die because we had an appendicitis, because the doctors are arguing. And if old Joe Walsh would have screwed up, we would have sued Joe Walsh personally and taken his house away from him. Old Joe knew how to cut your appendix out. And he'd have done the best job he knew how. And if he'd have screwed it up, we'd have probably said, "Well, old Joe did his best and the patient died." And I doubt if anybody would have sued him. I never heard of old Joe getting sued. Well, hang on, boys and girls, we got to give you a reminder here, and we'll be right back with more on Critical Condition, a book written by Donald Bartlett and James Steele, Doubleday, New York. Get a copy. You'll be glad you did. It's $30 or thereabouts, I'm sure. But it'll be one of the better $30 bills that you spent. You get through reading this book here, and if you still stay in this insurance HMO program over here, you have to be brain dead. I mean brain dead. You read this book, and I'll guarantee you, it'll change your life. Well, at least as far as healthcare is concerned. Okay, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, just go to our webpage. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Remember, The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967, or go to the website georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send an email request. The sources of information that we use on this program are believed to be true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't necessarily mean that the authors or the publications so endorsed are going to recommend us or reciprocate. They may say, "My God, don't associate my name with that radical Gordon guy." Now, most of the authors of these publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by us here at the Law Hour either. So I don't want you to think, you know, because we recommend Critical Condition, that we recommend everything that Doubleday of New York publishes or that Donald Bartlett or James Steele write. But this just happens to be a dynamite book in my view, and so I'm recommending it. And keep in mind that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers or sponsors, management or staff of the network or local radio stations. For more information about the law or an editorial review, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. Once more, get your pencil out, sharpen it on both ends. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. Remember, Critical Condition, Donald Bartlett and James Steele. I've just scratched the surface. This is the tip of the iceberg. I'm hitting all the high spots where I've read the book, and then I go through and I mark it. And I highlight it, and I say, oh my God, I can't believe this is going on in America. It's not only going on in America, it's going on around the world. It's just to lesser degrees, depending upon your local circumstances or local conditions. Now, lawmakers embrace the idea. That's these HMOs. Well, we want to manage healthcare like we manage the costs of stocks and bonds and automobiles. So we've applied the business model that we apply to manufacturing to healthcare, and this is the results that we've got. It's called Critical Condition. And the lawmakers back in the 70s who embraced the idea that the free market was the best way to achieve savings and promote efficiency without sacrificing quality care. Successive administrations and Congresses engineered a system built around the philosophy and the belief that Wall Street knows what's best for you. That competition is the road to low-cost quality healthcare. An oxymoron if there ever was one. In fact, free market medicine and competition have produced a lower quality of care than you would ever knowingly accept. Now, I'm going to pause here and make an observation. I think that that's an oxymoron. I think that what we have today is socialized medicine that we call the free marketplace, and that what we had 50 years ago was the free marketplace without socialized medicine. Let me show you the difference. Years ago, you walked into Dr. Joe's office, and you paid the guy. If you didn't like what Joe was charging, you could go over to the other doctor. And after all, there was two. Hell, there might have been three or four. I only knew of two in Eureka back when I was a kid. And the hospital. Hey, listen, we only had one charitable hospital, you know, back in those days. Now, there's two hospitals, and neither one of them are charitable. Both of them are multi-million dollar institutions designed for profit and gain. And listen, back in 1950, they had to operate at least a break-even. And I never heard of such a thing as, oh, we ran out of X-ray developer, or oh my God, I don't know if I should operate on you because I don't know who I'm working for and I don't know whether I've got a contract with that entity. Now what you've got today is socialized medicine that goes under the guise of free market medicine. Now they're lying to you is what they're doing. Now what you got here is socialized medicine. The sharks are circling and they're eating us alive. I would contend that we'd be better off if we went back to the old free marketplace. That's where you pay the doctor directly. You pay the hospital directly. You personally are responsible. Every time you go to the doctor or the hospital, you have to pay for it yourself. It's not a third-party insurance company that's paying for it. That way, you're always getting your money's worth. And let me tell you, when you're paying the bills, you'll be a whole lot more careful about the way you spend your money. You know, today, when you've got insurance, you're spending the insurance company's money, and the insurance company is working hard to keep you from squandering their money. That's all it really boils down to. That's socialized medicine. That's not free enterprise. Now, while there were flaws in the free market medicine theory from the start, HMOs flourished, making many investors and executives rich. They even seemed to work. Just by limiting hospital stays, they shaved billions of dollars off the nation's medical bills. That's not off of your medical bill, it's off the nation's medical bills. That's socialism, boys and girls. From each according to his ability and to each according to his need. But those were one-time savings. To keep paring costs, they began micromanaging the daily decisions of individual physicians. Doctors who had spent their professional lives dictating patient care suddenly were on the receiving end. Insurers now told them which treatments they could use with their patients and which they couldn't, which drugs they could prescribe and which ones they couldn't, which tests they could administer and which ones they couldn't. And they were told what they would be paid for their services. That's not free enterprise. That's not marketplace economics, boys and girls. That's communism. Pure and simple. And the communist system never worked for anything. Communism is the system where you stand in line and share the shortage. And that's what you have in American healthcare. You stand in line and you share the shortage. When I was a kid, there wasn't any lines lined up over there at Joe Walsh's office. Hell, you could call Joe. You didn't even need to call for an appointment. Hell, you just went down to Joe's office and walked in and sat down. There might be three or four people in there. You just waited your turn. Old Joe would see you. Hell, he'd see you if he had to stay until 6 o'clock. He'd answer the telephone at 2 o'clock in the morning. If this guy that had the appendicitis had called old Joe Walsh at 2 o'clock in the morning, old Joe would have answered and said, you're having pain? Hell, man, you might be having appendicitis. I better come over there and take a look at you. You know, they talk about house calls. Old Joe Walsh used to make house calls. He came over. I had pneumonia when I was about 5 years old. I was in the hospital with pneumonia. Old Joe used to come over and inspect me at home, 1724 H Street in Eureka, California. Old Joe lived three doors up and across the street. That's where he lived. And hell, when he got through work, why, he'd be coming home, and when he came home, he'd just pull up in front of our house and come in. Well, how's little Georgie? And he'd get his stethoscope out, you know, and he'd listen to me breathe and tell me to cough a couple of times. And then he'll get back in his car and drive three doors up and park in front of his house and go on inside. Now, I would contend that that was free enterprise market medicine, and we had to pay him. You know, when old Joe came over by the house, you know, that was a call, and he'd send you a bill, or probably paid right on the spot. I don't know how they paid, but Not anymore. Boy, you got insurance now. Boy, you got to have an appointment to get in the office. This doctor can only spend 10 or 15 minutes with you, and if he spends more than his allotted time with you, he's not going to get paid for that. He knows that. He belongs to the HMO care. That's why I'm telling you doctors out there, why don't you get the hell out of the HMO cares and go back to free market, free enterprise market medicine. Customer comes in, he pays you, and walks out the door. You get paid. You want to go to my business school, I'll show you how to get paid in gold coin. Now, there may have been flaws in the free market medicine theory from the start, but these HMOs flourished. And as noticed earlier, it was in part to counter this growing power of HMOs and hospitals that the physician practice management, PPM, idea took off, and nowhere was it greeted more enthusiastically than in California. The state had long been a fertile ground for large group practices and neighborhood clinics, and appeared to be an ideal setting for the national PPM chains to penetrate the region. Notice what's happening here. Instead of individual practices like Joe Walsh that I've been describing to you, where old Joe's got an office down on 6th Street, you know, between E and F, and you go into Joe's office and you sit down and wait your turn, and old Joe comes out and he collects his money from you. Little private practice. Now these doctors belong to clinics, just like law firms. I mean, hell, you could have 10 or 15 doctors, you know, all practicing in this clinic, which is incorporated, of course, so that we could have limited liability so that you can't sue us. We're all insured with malpractice insurance, and that malpractice insurance may cost us $6,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a year for premiums, and we have to pass it on to you in the cost of services. Don't think for a moment that any doctor ever pays for his malpractice insurance. It's his patients that are paying that malpractice. And then you got all these insurance forms that have to be sent out. 27% of the doctor's overhead is in this paperwork. I'll bet you if you took a look, just add these two together, 27% for paperwork, and what's the percentage that the malpractice insurance costs? I don't know. I don't have the numbers for that, but, you know, add another 5, 10, 15, 20%. I don't know. Hell, it could be as much as half. Old Joe, you know, when he did a job, he made it all. You mean you gave him the $5, and old Joe stuck the $5 in his wallet? He had a nurse in there. I remember that. He had to pay her salary, I'm sure. But I can remember my dad reaching in his wallet and pulling out the $5 bill for the office and maybe $2.50 for some shot or some medicine or some prescription or something else. My God, you paid cash right on the spot. Doctors always got paid. Listen to this story in here. Doctors won't perform services because they're not getting paid. And we showed you coming right out of the chute. Many of these doctors over here, they bill the insurance company for their services, and then the insurance company steals from them by cutting the blocks down and paying them less for their services than they were entitled to or they billed out. You'd have tried that in 1950 and told old Joe, I'm not going to pay you your $5. Old Joe would have said, well, then go find another doctor because I'm not going to treat you. That's what marketplace economics is all about. You want old Joe's services, by God, you got to pay him. I don't blame these doctors for saying, oh, I'm not going to treat these patients. I'm not getting paid. Now, among those acquiring a segment of the California market was MedPartners Incorporated, the Larry House-run PPM. And you'll recall from our earlier discussion, that was a Wall Street favorite in the 1990s. Well, in 1995, Alabama-based MedPartners bought a large privately held physician practice management company headquartered in Long Beach, California, Mulliken Medical Enterprise LP, and changed its name to Medical Partners Mulliken Incorporated, serving 350,000 HMO enrollees at 58 clinics. Mulliken had been a fixture of California healthcare for decades. MedPartners Mulliken was launched with high hopes and big promises, telling investors the company enhances clinic operations by centralizing administrative functions and introducing management tools such as clinical guidelines, utilization review, and outcomes measurement. Hell, that's just communism. Whether it's run by the state or run by a corporation, what you're dealing with here is socialism, socialized medicine, pure and simple. Now, that's why you're having problems with America's medical system. America's medical system didn't have a problem until you socialized it. You couldn't socialize it at the national level through the government, so you socialized it through the corporations chartered at the state level. And then you socialized it further by putting it public on Wall Street. These are just profit-making enterprises, and when you join this HMO, you're just another cog in a great big machine over here that's getting milked. Nothing more, nothing less. Doesn't have anything to do with healthcare. It has to do with making money. And remember, when you call your HMO, you can't get a doctor's appointment and tell some clerk somewhere who has absolutely no knowledge of medicine whatsoever. I mean, you could call this guy up, this clerk at your HMO, and say, I'm having pains down here at the bottom. He punches the button and says, well, gosh, that could be appendicitis or 15 other things. And then he qualifies that down. Who in the hell are you talking to? A crummy clerk? And you call that medicine? I call that nonsense and insanity. As I pointed out before, you know, you want to walk into the doctor's office and sit down. That's what I do. I got a doctor. I don't see this guy very often. I avoid him like AIDS, herpes, and VD. We avoided old Joe Walsh like AIDS, herpes, and VD, too. It was expensive to go to the doctor. I'm just telling you that one of these days you may have a real medical emergency, and you might need a doctor, and you're going to call your HMO and go through a clerk who gets paid a bonus if he can keep you away from the doctor and away from a nurse. If the insurance clerk can keep you away from medical services, he gets a bonus. Now, what do you think your chances of getting a doctor's visit are going to be? Now, in some instances, even routine care was a money loser. A California Medical Association study found that the state's pediatricians, on average, lost $270 for each child that they treated. The capitation rates did not even cover the cost of preventive care, including immunizations and office visits. And physicians were expected to lose $157 a year on each child. Given these numbers, the CMA said, it's no surprise that experts who have studied this issue have concluded that children with chronic conditions would probably remain at risk if they received their health care through a competitive health care market such as the one in California. You get that? You people with chronic disease over here, you stick with this HMO and you should be able to die with it. You can't get medical services anymore. Of course, you're saving money. You know, you're saving insurance premiums. Instead of $10,000 a year, maybe you're getting your insurance premiums for $8,000 a year. Let me tell you, boys and girls, the insurance company now is making the money instead of the doctors. And the doctors are getting ticked off because they're not getting paid. And they're not making enough money. And so they got to raise their rates. And so they're constantly raising their rates. The insurance companies are constantly trying to shave the doctor's charges. The doctor has to see more people and spend less time with them so that he can generate more revenue. Then the government comes in, taxes the doctor because he makes more money. We have this progressive income tax. Remember the second plank to the Communist Manifesto? So we got a communist tax system, and now we got a communist medical system. And I'm one of the few people in the country that isn't complaining about America's medical system. I don't participate in it, so it's not a problem to me. I don't participate in the tax system, so it's not a problem to me. And I'd like to suggest that you think about that also. And that's what this book, Critical Condition, is all about. Now, these people are socialists. I would guess that this guy, Donald Bartlett and James Steele, are socialists that want to reform the socialist medical system in America. They see that it's broken and needs to be fixed. And what's their solution? Go back to traditional medical care? No, they got a chapter in here that tells you, we got to fix the socialist system with more socialist measures. And I would suggest to you, as I've said many a time, if you've got venereal disease and you look back and you got the venereal disease down at Flo's Whorehouse, do you say to yourself, oh, I know, I've got VD. I need a cure for VD. I will go to Flo's Whorehouse to get a cure. The hell kind of sense does that make? My common sense, you know, says to me, boys and girls, that if socialism is your problem, more socialism is not the cure. I know it's a wild new idea. And I'd be the last guy in the world to tell you socialists out there to reconsider something else, you know. If you don't have enough from the socialism that you've already experienced, obviously you need more of it. You haven't learned your lesson yet. So get after it and repair your socialist medical system with more socialism. And in the process over there, you'll get poorer and poorer service. Now remember, we're talking about these people that died. Every one of these people in this chapter, chapter 3, every one of these people that died is dying from doctor-induced death. Doctor-induced death. It's called iatrogenic disease. It's the doctor didn't diagnose you correctly. The doctor gave you too much of the wrong drug. He gave you the right drug, but he didn't give you enough of it, and you died. You know, on your death certificate, the death certificate for this guy Hudson is not going to say, Hudson died because of a screw-up with his HMO healthcare provider. His death certificate says he died from a ruptured appendix. Ruptured appendix. I find it hard to believe that when I was a kid, if you had a pain in your stomach, that a doctor, when I was a kid 50 years ago, 60 years ago, couldn't diagnose correctly and then take you to the hospital, operate on you, and cut out your appendix. I never heard of such a thing. It was such a routine thing that health doctors were cutting kids' tonsils and adenoids and appendix out, whether they were ruptured, whether they needed to be cut out or not. It was the beginning of modern medicine. It was preventive medicine. Well, your tonsils are going to swell and they're going to hurt you at some point in time, so might as well take them out right now. I was one of the few kids that survived adolescence with his tonsils, adenoids, and appendix in his body. They thought they were vestigial organs that didn't have any purpose. Part of the evolutionary screw-up. Time and chance. Today they haven't got time to cut it out, or they're arguing and fighting over it, and the point of the story here is that these people died needlessly. Every one of these people in here is suffering from malpractice. And this malpractice continues on and on, and it gets bigger and worse as the years go on, and the insurance premiums for malpractice are so great that many doctors are giving up pediatrics because the costs are so great for the malpractice insurance. Coupled with the return that they get, they just quit. We saw that in this book here. One guy down in Texas, you know, he gave up his medical practice and went into Congress. Changed his career from medicine to politics. He went from one criminal activity to another criminal activity. Well, the state of California was stunned in July of 1998 by the crash of San Diego-based FPA Medical Management, another publicly held physician practice management company with 7,900 doctors and 1.4 million patients in some two dozen states, including 300,000 in California. The company's sudden trek to bankruptcy court created havoc among physicians and patients in California and left the state struggling to arrange doctor coverage for thousands of insured patients. Insured patients. The only people that were affected were the insured patients. I'm not insured. I don't want to practice socialized medicine. That's why I avoid insurance like AIDS, herpes, and VD. I want medical services. I don't want insurance. I don't want to practice from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. I don't want to sit in line and share the shortage. I don't want to call some jerk on the telephone and have some incompetent clerk start asking me questions about how I feel to determine whether or not I should see a doctor or not. Damn it, when I want to see a doctor, I want to see him right now, and I'll pay him for it. And let me assure you, the last time I saw a doctor was about 10 years ago when I had gout. Remember that gout story? I went in and paid the doctor. I paid him $75. And he gave me the service that I wanted. I paid him $75. He took two x-rays and said, your ankle, your foot is not broken. It's what I needed to know. It's what I paid for. It's what I found out. Now, I could have been paying $10,000 a year in health coverage. I had a student in here the other day said when he started out with his health care coverage, he said it was very affordable. It was only $255 a month. My God, that's $3,000 a year. He said now his health care coverage is $7,000 a year. It's not uncommon for your health care coverage. In fact, I think the national average, as I understand it, national average health care premiums are $10,000 a year now. So I guess that for the $3,000, $7,000, you don't get a whole lot. I don't know. I don't buy the stuff, so I don't know what they cover and what the prices are. Just what I read in the papers, as old Will Rogers used to say. Well, I'm about out of time. I got to cut this off here in a second. I'm going to remind you one more time. This book is called Critical Condition. It's $26, and I think it's $26 here. I got a number that says $26 right inside the fly cover. No, there was a discount. It says 10% discount, and it's got $22.45 up here in the corner. I'll take that back. I said before I thought it was around $30. I see a 10% discount. I see $22.45 in the corner, and I would guess that's probably the price of the book, unless the wife was writing her shopping list in it. It's called Critical Condition, and it's published by Doubleday of New York. Just came out. It's been out on the market about 6 months. Dynamite book. And as I said before, if you stay with the HMO insurance program after reading this book, you've got to be brain dead. D-E-D. Brain dead. So that's that story. I'm going to put this book right over here. That's the last of the series. We'll be back again tomorrow night with a new topic. I don't know what we'll be talking about, but it'll be something kind of wild. I'll tell you what I want to tell you one of these days is Poison Drops in the Federal Senate by Zach Montgomery. In fact, I think that's the one I'm going to do next. Poison Drops in the Federal Senate. I'll tell you about your public school system, and I think you're going to be absolutely amazed at the public school system, welfare, food stamps, insanity, prison populations, crime, dysfunction, family dysfunction caused by public education. Maybe I'll do that next. Hey, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week over here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the law, or just go to the website, it's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. The law hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these law hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Remember, the law hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. Remember, the law hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. That's it. We're out of time. See you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.